Recently, there was an article which was published by Rav Shlomo Aviner. Rav Shlomo Aviner, the Rosh Hashiva of Ateret Kohanim, the chief rabbi of Beit El, is considered one of the forefront leaders of religious Zionism here in Eretz Yisrael. And he published an article entitled HaMa'avak Al Arzenu, the struggle that we have in terms of our country, Eretz Yisrael. And he posed what would appear to be a very significant question, what we would see as a very fundamental one: what should be the main focus of the struggle for Eretz Yisrael today? Or how would it be, or how would we best invest our energies in Eretz Yisrael today? It's a question which was asked, and the reason why it's asked is because it's very difficult today. In our times, the challenges and obstructions that stand in our way to ensure a secure and stable country, it's difficult to remain focused. Even at times, you'll excuse me, it's difficult to remain loyal to what appears to be an unstable, makeshift plans of a weak and frighteningly unpredictable government. And therefore, Rav Aviner posed the question which is so vital to ask. And he explains that if we were to compare, kevyachol, this question to a disease, chas v'shalom, if someone was struck with an illness, well, the doctors, when they were trying to understand and to come up with a proper diagnosis, they certainly wouldn't concentrate on the external symptoms, but they would try to get to the heart of the matter, no pun intended. They would try to appreciate the reason where exactly the problem of the illness began, the reason for the sickness itself. And therefore, Rav Aviner explains that clearly the reason for the sickness, so to speak, the disease, the illness of what haunts Eretz Yisrael today, is the problem of pachad, fear, being frightened. Recently, I had the opportunity, the privilege, to hear a Rav in Chispin. I was visiting Chispin, nice little yeshuv in the Golan, northern part of Eretz Yisrael. And this Rav had a tremendous, tremendous story. There's a Rebbe there in Chispin. He told the story. He happened to be involved in the Second Lebanon War. He was involved in battle, unfortunately. He was injured. Baruch Hashem, he's well. But when I approached him after his talk about what went on during the war, I asked him, where exactly, you know, you read articles about the fact that it's clearly documented, the fact that this war was a disaster for Eretz Yisrael. It was a failure. Certainly wasn't a victory. Where did the problems come from? And he explained to me that it clearly came from the highest chain of command, meaning from the government itself, the Rosh Memshala, the Prime Minister, the ministers, the Defense Minister, or lack of it thereof. He explained that when you brought in units who were trained and trained for many months to fight properly and strategically deal with the challenges of these battles in Lebanon, when one of the soldiers was wounded, or chas v'chalila, one of the soldiers was lost or died, the government was very quick to pull the entire unit back to Eretz Yisrael and to send in a fresh unit. Why was this? Because they didn't want to look bad. They didn't want there to be reports about a unit that lost a man, chalila, or that a soldier was injured in, and they would pull units that were trained, and had trained so hard, to be able to equip themselves properly, to strategize for approaching the battle with sound mind. They would pull them out because of fear of how they would appear in the news, of how they would be reported and look bad in the public eye. And therefore they put innocent soldiers' lives in danger. See, he was quick to say that it was the highest chain of command, the way that the entire war was run, was totally irresponsible. And that certainly instills a country, an army, with a weakness, the weakness of fear. And therefore, Rav Aviner posed, what exactly is the solution? Well, logically, one would say, The solution to fear is to instill a sense of oz ugvura, which is translated as strength, courage, a resilience within the people, within the soldiers, within the amcha, the nation itself. This oz ugvura, the strength and the courage, is instilled and translated by Rav Aviner as being loving, understanding, and appreciating what exactly Eretz Yisrael is supposed to mean to us. In other words, the strength and courage and the resilience that has to exist and be implanted in the people of Eretz Yisrael, in Am Yisrael, begins by instilling empathy. When we instill empathy, we initiate ideology. And an idealist, my friend, is strong. A person who holds with them and equips themselves with ideology has the consummate allegiance to what he believes in. The military commander Yitzhak Sadeh, who is one of the founding members of the Palmach, had said, and I quote you, "A truly strong person is not someone who is never afraid, but rather someone who derives his strength as an idealist and whose gratification is supplied by the mission he is involved in." Baruch Hashem, I feel privileged, I am zoche, to be part of an extremely important focal mission in today's Eretz Yisrael. I teach in the Yeshivot Hezder of Sderot. Sderot, which doesn't miss a day of news in the front headlines. Sderot, the city which is constantly bombarded by Qassam rockets, constantly in the face of danger. I have the zchut, the privilege, to teach young men who are idealists, who instill themselves with ideology. Young men who learn in yeshiva, who equip themselves with kihem chayenu ve'orech yameinu, and yet who understand the importance of protecting and furthering the security of Eretz Yisrael l'shem Am Yisrael. And to me, I consider it an outstanding and unique opportunity. On Friday, there was an article which was published by the Jerusalem Post. Sderot Yeshiva fights despair with faith. The article says that a day after an estimated 20 Qassam rockets struck this beleaguered town, hours before a 40-year-old woman was thrown against the wall by a Qassam blast, the study hall at the Sderot Hezder Yeshiva was evacuated. About 300 young men who combined Torah study with army service calmly left the hall, but they weren't running away. They were following instructions. A civil engineer had ordered them to temporarily step outside while construction workers finished the expansion of a 4-story education and prayer complex. The yeshiva is building additional facilities on 2 sides, and there are more buildings housing another 125 students, all part of an inadequately financed multi-million-dollar expansion program. Over the past several years, the yeshiva has grown 15% annually. There are about 550 students enrolled, 80 of whom currently serve in the army. The signs of growth, building cranes, cement mixtures, tractors, are all the more conspicuous against Sderot's backdrop. Media reports have estimated that 3,000 people have left Sderot in the past few years. Tired of living in fear, residents are heading for places beyond the range of Gaza's rockets and mortars. However, there is a parallel countervailing migration. Around 50 young religious Zionist families have moved to town, with most of the men graduates of the Sderot Hezder Yeshiva. David Avikar, 23, is one of them. After finishing his army service, Avikar returned to Sderot with his wife Yael. They moved into the town's Kastor neighborhood, which has lost at least 5 families in recent months. Avikar is involved in morale strengthening activities such as tutoring children, teaching in the local schools, and giving lectures on his combat experiences during the Second Lebanon War. He spent a month fighting in Lebanese Shiite towns such as Bin Jibal, Atiya al-Shabak, and Ma'un al-As. "When I come back to Sderot after the war, it was weird," he said. "It was as if nothing had changed. In a sense, I was still in the line of fire." The Israeli concept of a people's army, which normally refers to mandatory conscription, takes on a new meaning in Sderot. Here, civilians are on the front line. Why would a young man like Avikar choose to live in a working-class town, an hour's drive from Tel Aviv, giving you a sense of how small the country is, Rabbi Shai, and even farther from Yerushalayim, one that has become a bullseye for the crude shrapnel-filled rockets and the mortar shells? "Me and Yael are on a mission," said Avikar. "We are here to strengthen the Jewish people. That's the education I received at the yeshiva." Sderot Hesder Yeshiva and the dozens of religious Zionist yeshivot like it around the country teach that it is a religious obligation to settle the land of Eretz Yisrael. Any act furthering this goal, be it army service or strengthening the morale of Sderot residents, is also a religious obligation. Yeshiva head Rabbi David Findel is resolved to stay put. "The Palestinians are determined to turn Sderot into a ghost town," he says, "while we are making it a place of Torah and Zionist ideals. They are trying to destroy, while we are trying to build more every day. They are trying to break our spirit, but we will continue to provide hope." Yaakov Avinu, Jacob our forefather, nurtured the spirit. In this week's parsha of Vayechi Yaakov, the life of Yaakov, we conclude the story of Yaakov Avinu, although some would say that his story actually begins. Yaakov is known as Bechir HaAvot, the chosen forefather, a tremendous, outstanding personality of charisma, of the strength and resilience of which we spoke a few moments ago. And while Yaakov closes the trilogy of the Avot, the concept of Am Yisrael as a result of Yaakov becomes in the forefront of our consciousness. Avram and Yitzchak, Abraham and Isaac, undoubtedly implanted and instilled inside of us a sense of monotheism, of religious awareness, and yet they are considered transient. Yaakov is rooted. Yaakov is the heart and soul of settlement, of beginning, of a civilization, of a nation, of a country. And therefore, if we could for a moment reflect in the pivotal time when Yaakov is informed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kiviyachol that indeed this would be the banner that he would wave. Let us return for a moment to Parshat Vayetze, in the dream that Yaakov sees that he would lead the future of the Jewish nation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu declares, after he falls to sleep, "Haaretz asher ata shochev aleha," the land which you shochev aleha, that you lie upon, "lecha etnena ulezarecha acharecha," this land will be given to you and to your children who follow. And at first glance, and face value, we would say that this promise by HaKadosh Baruch Hu seems unsubstantial. This land, Yaakov lies at most in Dalet Amot, in a few cubit feet upon which he lies, that land is promised to the Jewish people. What is this supposed to mean? And Rashi, of course, understands that this is not the interpretation. Says Rashi, "Shochev aleha," that you lie upon, "Kipel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kol Eretz Yisrael Tachtav," HaKadosh Baruch Hu took all of Israel, if you may, all of the land, he folded it over and placed it under Yaakov's restful body. "Rimez lo shetehei nocha lechavesh lebanav." Kadosh Baruch Hu told Yaakov as such that it would be a land that would be conquerable. It would be fairly easy, a feat that could be accomplished to conquer Eretz Yisrael. Why is this? Explains Rav Aviner. Yaakov is shochev al Eretz Yisrael. He lies upon the land. But lest we think for a moment that this lying is one of passivity. No. Yaakov is not passively lying on the land. To shochev on the land means to embrace it, to encompass it, and therefore to be prepared to sacrifice for it. Yaakov, when he awakens from the dream, Vayikach ha'even asher sam merashotav, he takes the stone that he had placed under his head. Why is this stone under his head? The stone is the stone of Eretz Yisrael, the land of our forefathers. And it is under his head, because the head is the place by which we forge ideology. The head is the part of our body where we can conceptualize. The head is the part of our anatomy that gives us true meaning and depth to our existence. And this is precisely what is represented by Yaakov's subservience and sacrifice towards Eretz Yisrael. By Avraham Avinu it says, Kum hitalech ba'aretz, rise and walk the land. By Yitzchak HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Shchon ba'aretz, gur ba'aretz, live and dwell in the land. But by Yaakov Avinu it is more. He is shochev al ha'aretz. He lies in the land. He embraces the land. He hugs the land. He is davuk la'aretz, which means that he clings to the soul and the rhyme and reason of what this land represents. Yaakov Avinu is the reason why Qassam rockets cannot deter us from the plan that lays ahead. Yaakov Avinu is the reason why 3,000 people leave Sderot under threats of being attacked, only to be replaced by 150 families of Yeshiva Bochrim who are committed to ideology. And therefore, says Rav Shlomo Aviner in conclusion of this fascinating insight, and I read you in Hebrew, Nagbir be'uma et ahavat Eretz Yisrael. Let us strengthen inside the nation a love, a passion of Eretz Yisrael. Ve'az nachzik ota b'msirut. Only when that love and passion is instilled can we hold it even under sacrifice. Va'afilu nosif lifrotz yama v'kedma tzafona v'negba. Even if it means that we are spread both throughout the diaspora and throughout the land of Israel itself. Im tirzu einzo agada. Which in English translates as, where there is a will, there is a way. Shabbat shalom. We are all familiar with the fact that in Parshat Vayechi, Yaakov, when he blesses Menashe and Ephraim, he switches his hands and places his right, stronger hand on the head of Ephraim, who is younger. But Yosef protests. Interestingly enough, however, Yosef only protests to this action of his father and tells his father that he should place his right hand on the older son, Menashe, only after Yaakov gives the blessing. After Yaakov says, Hamalach HaGoeloti, then Yosef points out that Yaakov was mistaken. Why didn't Yosef protest to his father's action before the blessing was given? Shabbat Shalom.